Hello, this is Dave with the weekend edition for the News Gazette dated January 5th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with Kathy's mailbag, headlined, Who Owns the Trailer Park South of Ludlow, and Are There Plans to Clean Up the Area? Champaign County Zoning Administrator John Hall says the property is the former Triangle Mobile Home Park, which is involved in a court case with the Illinois Attorney General's Office and Illinois Environmental Protection Agency over the bad water system. Based on court records from 2021, the park is officially closed, but Hall said the court case is ongoing. Champaign County real estate records show the owner as Jericho Property Management, based in Gainesville, Georgia. The property taxes for 2020, 2022, and 2023 went unpaid and were sold. In April 2023, we asked the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office to ask the Attorney General if they were going to clean up the property as part of the court case, but we have not heard if they ever received an answer, Hall said. April 2023 was also the last time that we inspected the property and confirmed there were no occupants. The former mobile home park has been deteriorating for several years. As it has been explained to our staff, the manufactured homes have been abandoned by the owners who were tenants in the park, Hall said. And the park management, so they claimed, has never found a way to dispose of the homes because they did not have title to the homes. I suspect the park management might not have put the legal resources into gaining title to the homes. In late 2018, county officials asked the state's attorney's office for advice on how to proceed to get the property cleaned up, but Hall said they never got a reply. The park has lost its non-conforming zoning rights, so it cannot reopen without a zoning approval, he said. The property is zoned R5, manufactured home park, but a special use permit would need to be approved to rehabilitate slash redevelop as a manufactured home park. He said his department has not yet sent a violation notice to the park's owners, quote, because we have been waiting to see what happens as a result of the state of Illinois legal case, unquote. Continuing on the front page, the opinion of Tom Kasich, titled, The Town Rantoul Could Have Become. If only Rantoul could get a do-over. The people of the northern Champaign County village were never given a choice. But if they had been, is there any doubt what name they would have selected for their town? Before it became a depot stop along the newly built Illinois Central Railroad, the area was known informally as Mink Grove. According to local lore, the Native Americans called the area Nepswa, which was the term for an area where minks were abundant. The first white settler, likely Archer Campbell, who came here from New York State around 1848, and later became the first mayor of Urbana, called the area Mink Grove. That name was never formally attached to the village because there was no village until 1854. That's when the IC, now the Canadian National, came to Champaign County and established a stop near Mink Grove and called it Rantoul, honoring Robert Rantoul, one of the first directors of the railroad, who had died 2 years earlier. Rantoul was a man of great accomplishment, having graduated from Harvard, performed as an accomplished lawyer interested in political and social justice, and later served in the U.S. Senate and then the U.S. House, representing Massachusetts, until his early death at the age of 46. It's true that Rantoul likely never would have become the village it is today without the Illinois Central and later the Chanute Air Force Base. But what would it have become if it were known as Mink Grove instead of Rantoul? Is there a more evocative, enchanting name for a community in central Illinois? Before land speculators and railroads came to the county and gave many of the towns their names, Penfield, Gifford, Philo, Foosland, pioneers called the settlements more poignant terms like Big Grove, Burr Oak Grove, Hickory Grove, Knox's Point, and Prather's Ford. All were charming names, but none more vivid than Mink Grove. Not only was it descriptive of an idyllic place, but it apparently was geographically accurate. A History of Champaign County, published in 1878, recalled Mink Grove as a charming little oasis and an almost tropical luxuriance in the midst of a vast and monotonous prairie. Campbell, in a letter written in 1870, said that game in the grove was abundant, including fowl, wolves, deer, muskrats, and minks. That there were minks meant that there was plenty of water in the area, and that it was called a grove meant that there were plenty of trees. The grove also contained some of the highest ground in the area, making it an ideal setting for Campbell to build his log cabin and farm the rich Champaign County soil. So where was Mink Grove? None of the early histories provide a precise location, but they offer clues. Katie Padagrossi, a late mayor of Rantoul and the author of a 1976 history of the village, placed Campbell's cabin about where the First Baptist Church is now located. That puts it in the northwest corner of the village, just north of US 136 and a half mile or so east of Interstate 57. It's a relatively hilly, wooded area that is prone to flooding and already has a few ponds and retention basins. It would be the perfect site for a settlement named Mink Grove. You would get no argument from Karen McCartney, who has lived all but two of her 74 years in northwest Rantoul, on a beautiful 2-acre piece of land known locally as The Hill. Her father, the late Tony Bilek, acquired the property in 1952. It was a place of peace and refuge for a man who had survived the infamous Bataan Death March and endured 3.5 years in a Japanese POW camp, right up to the end of World War II. A native of Chicago, Bilek came back to Rantoul after the war, the same place he had entered the Army Air Corps in 1936, and started a wholesale and retail business growing plants and flowers on the hill. Eventually, McCartney said, there were 12 greenhouses on the property, as well as the family home, that Bilek built on his own, scavenging materials from anywhere he could. Much of the glass and frames for the greenhouses came from the orchard that was being cleared to make way for Chicago's O'Hare Airport. It was a utopian setting for McCartney and her two brothers. In the spring, the area around the hill would flood, and the McCartney kids would launch a homemade dinghy and sail the seas of northwest Rantoul. Her father built a 3-level treehouse in the grove. In the winter, they would go sledding down the hill, shooting past the trees and other obstacles. Girl and Boy Scouts would have campouts on the property, much like the Native Americans centuries earlier. The Bilek kids found Indian arrowheads scattered about the hill and the surrounding bottomlands. My dad wanted us kids to roam and to learn. He was always wanting us to learn things, she said. In the mid-1970s, the land surrounding the hill was developed as the Indian Hills Subdivision, with street names like Nipswa, Woodland, and Moraine. Meanwhile, village officials told Bilek that he had to come up with a name for the lane that ran up the hill. He chose Mink Grove. When we were kids, the area always was known as the Grove, but my dad was the one who called it Mink Grove. He named that street Mink Grove, she said. He said, how about Mink Grove Lane, because this is where the minks used to come, McCartney said, She never saw minks in the ponds or the lowlands, although she saw plenty of fish and other wildlife. But that doesn't mean that the small, discreet mammals aren't still around Champaign County. Yes, it seems like mink have made a resurgence in Illinois, said Max Allen, a carnivore ecologist at the Illinois Natural History Survey in Champaign. Although it may not seem like it, mink can be found in most of the small waterways. I document them relatively frequently with camera traps in Champaign County, as well as by spotting roadkill. Minks are widespread and occupy most of the streams in east central Illinois, said Adam Ehlers, an associate professor at Kansas State University, who once was a visiting scientist at the Natural History Survey here. Folks rarely see them unless they are looking for them, as they are mostly nocturnal, he explained in an email. During late February to mid-April, you'll see a lot of mink roadkill on I-57 near bridges, as this is the time males are dispersing across the landscape, looking for females. This also happens to be a time when they are more susceptible to predation by coyotes because they are traveling through barren corn and soybean fields. Ehlers said he used to live trap mink on a landowner's property between Rantoul and Champaign. He was an old World War II veteran, and he told me that while he was attending UIUC prior to World War II, he caught one male mink in a small drainage ditch near his house, he said. He made enough money from that one mink on the fur market to pay for his entire semester tuition at UIUC. Ryan Teske of LODA, a member of the East Central Illinois Fur Takers, said he also believes that minks are making a comeback. From my conversations with older trappers, the mink population is presently as strong or stronger than it was in the 1970s and 80s, he said. I have neighbors with chicken and duck ventures who have had their small flocks killed by mink in recent years. It would be absurd and absurdly costly to change Rantoul's name after 170 years, but perhaps someday a new village will spring up northwest of Rantoul, and the townspeople will want to be true to the geography, history, and culture of the area. Rather than name it for a Yankee who had never visited East Central Illinois, they could name it for a furry little mammal that has been here for centuries. Tom Kasich's column appears weekends in the News Gazette, and he can be reached at kasich@newsgazette.com. And continuing inside the front page, we have Top of the Morning, Something to Get You Going Today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. As if the tension between coaches at the Citrus Bowl wasn't enough, Officer Chris Williams was tossed another curveball as he escorted Brett Bielema toward South Carolina's Shane Beamer after Tuesday's Illini win. A tub full of Cheez-Its that was dumped on coach and his security detail. It caught me completely by surprise, Williams said. I was so focused on getting Coach Bielema to Coach Beamer for the handshake, I forgot about the Cheez-Its dump until it happened. It was electric. Williams, the University of Illinois Police Department's liaison to the football program since 2021, thoroughly enjoyed this season's 10-win ride. His first pump caught by cameras after the Illini's overtime win at Nebraska was so good that Fox Sports included it on its list of top 10 moments of the season, the time this officer was hyped after Illinois beat Nebraska. I received a lot of positive feedback, a lot of text messages about the video, he said. I spend a lot of time with the team during the season and really build a bond with everyone. I'm proud of their accomplishments and sometimes celebrate when they do well. The Citrus Bowl upset, seeing the smiles on everyone's faces, and working with Bielema, he can make you believe in yourself and your abilities. Rank up there for Williams, who describes his role as a mix of monitoring and mentoring. Even if there was a portal for athletic liaisons, like there is for college athletes, he's not budging from Bielema's side. I am ecstatic about returning for the 2025 season and looking forward to what's in store. And in area history, in 1925, the Champaign Real Estate Board elected new officers at its meeting, L.W. Bramblett, President, W.O. McAllister, Vice President, E.B. McIntosh, Secretary, and T.H. McClellan, Treasury. In 2010, two veterinarians and some students from the University of Illinois Veterinarian Teaching Hospital were called to help with a truck loaded with hogs that overturned west of Champaign. The crash caused both lanes of southbound Interstate 57 to be closed for more than 3 hours. In international history, today's highlight, on January 4th, 2007, Nancy Pelosi was elected the first female Speaker of the House as Democrats took control of Congress. On this date, in 1853, New Yorker Solomon Northup regained his freedom after being kidnapped in Washington, D.C. and forced into slavery in 1841. He would later tell his story in his memoir, 12 Years a Slave. In 1896, Utah was admitted as the 45th U.S. state. In 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson delivered his State of the Union address, in which he outlined the goals of his Great Society initiative. In 1974, President Richard Nixon refused to hand over tape recordings and documents subpoenaed by the Senate Watergate Committee. And in 1999, Europe's new currency, the euro, got off to a strong start on its first trading day, rising against the dollar on world currency markets. And in 2004, NASA's Spirit rover landed on the surface of Mars. In 2006, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon suffered a significant stroke. His official powers were transferred to his deputy, Ehud Olmert. Sharon remained in a coma until his death in January 2014. In 2010, the Burj Khalifa, the tallest structure in the world, opened in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Continuing with our community's news, we have an article from Danville Development titled Commission Backs Rezoning Request for Lumberyard Proposal. Council to take up issue January 21st. This is by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. It's taken more than 5 years for plans to be ironed out and property acquisition to occur as part of the West Williams Street Realignment Project, which includes moving the Kirchner Building Center to the former Goodwill Building at the northwest corner of Gilbert and Fairchild Streets. The project took another step forward Thursday night when the Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approving the Farnsworth Group Incorporated's request to rezone the 9024 to 938 North Gilbert Street and areas on Robinson Street from R2 to B3 General Business in order to allow Kirchner to use the properties for a lumberyard and building materials storage site. And in Rantoul, from the Rantoul Family Sports Complex, headlined Busey Funding Pavilion to Shade Facilities Users. This is by Dave Hinton, Rantoul. Even sun lovers can attest that while soaking in the rays can be great, breaks are necessary. At the Rantoul Family Sports Complex, those breaks will come thanks to a partnership with Busey Bank. They were looking to sponsor us in what we are doing and asked, "What do you need and what can we sponsor?" said Ryan Reed, the sports operations director at the complex. One thing it needed was more shade. Busey will provide that by paying to erect a 40-foot square pavilion, a basic place for people to relax before, during, and after games, Reed said. The company will also sponsor placement of a couple of batter's eyes windscreens bearing its logo, situated behind center field, to minimize visual distractions while a batter is viewing a pitched ball. Reed is glad for the contribution, noting, "I'm glad they're interested in what we're doing up here and helping the community." Construction on the pavilion will begin when weather permits, and games will resume at the sports complex in just a few months. The first weekend in March, we'll see the complex will host a Division II college baseball tournament. The sports complex will be pretty much booked solid on weekends from then until the end of October. Slow pitch adult softball, which used to be a mainstay in about every town across America, is not as popular as a few decades ago, but is still active. As evidence, witness a One Nation tournament that will feature more than 40 teams at the Rantoul Complex. "It's a newer event that we hosted last year as well," Reed said. "There's still a big following of it." The sports complex also hosts a Champaign Church slow pitch league with more than 20 teams. The same weekend as One Nation, the complex hosts a quad ball tournament, a qualifier for the Quad Ball Cup. The quad ball is based on Quidditch, a sport introduced in the Harry Potter books. "It's kind of like rugby meets dodgeball meets soccer," Reed said. "Players compete while riding a PVC pipe. They tackle each other and throw dodgeballs as fast as they can," he said. The country's fastest growing participatory sport is pickleball, but the sports complex hasn't hosted any pickleball tournaments. "They require that you play on tennis ball material courts," Reed said. "If we ever venture into the indoor world, I would like to look into that." The complex is strictly an outdoor facility. Countless baseball, softball, and soccer teams will compete in tournaments there, and one football tournament has been booked. Rantoul Township High's soccer team also uses the facility, as does the marching band for certain practices. And continuing with a winter weather headlined snow, ice forecast to hit area. This is by Jana Wiersema and Jennifer Bailey. The National Weather Service is forecasting that a winter storm will impact various Illinois communities this weekend, including Champaign, Vermilion, Piatt, and Douglas counties. However, the storm may not be quite as harsh as previously expected, with the agency reporting at 1:16 p.m. on Friday that the latest forecast trends have reduced the overall amount of snowfall and also shifted the storm track slightly farther south. Still, a winter storm watch is in effect from late tonight through Monday morning, and there is a 60 to 80% chance of at least 6 inches of snow, the Weather Service said. Heavy mixed precipitation is also possible, and there is a 40 to 60% chance of at least 1/10 of an inch of accumulating flat ice. The following is a list of regional updates regarding preparations for the storm. The Champaign Public Works Department encourages residents to stay home if possible to allow crews more time to clear and treat roadways. Additionally, the department asks people to avoid street parking to make the process faster. According to the Vermilion County Emergency Management Agency on Friday afternoon, an updated midday National Weather Service forecast showed the Danville area getting between 4 and 8 inches of snow. CU at Home has announced that it will provide a warming shelter at 309 South Neal Street in Champaign for those in need from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, as wind chill values could potentially plummet into the minus 20s range in the coming week. The nonprofit expects to serve 15 to 25 individuals each day and is seeking the community support to help with these efforts. Their needs include volunteers to take individuals from the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District to the warming shelter at 8 a.m. and drives to take them from the warming shelter to the Stride shelter at 5 p.m. Donations of food and supplies are also needed. Volunteers and donors are encouraged to contact volunteer and event coordinator Alita Keith at 217-819-4569. Or alita@cuathome.us. The warming shelter will be open for sure next week, Monday through Friday, and we will continue to monitor the weather and make accommodations as needed beyond that, Keith told the News Gazette. The Village of Arthur has canceled Monday's Village Board meeting due to both weather forecast and a lack of business. The Village of Rantoul has declared a snow emergency that will begin at 7 a.m. Sunday and remain in effect until further notice. This means that vehicles must be moved out of designated snow routes so that plows have room to work. CU Safe Routes to School is seeking volunteers for its snow removal program, which is supported by the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District and a grant from the Illinois Department of Transportation. Volunteers pick a specific block or section of sidewalk that they will clean within 48 hours after a snowfall greater than 2 inches, the organization shared. Volunteers can sign up as individuals or sign up with a group, such as a parent-teacher organization, school club, or housemates. Outstanding volunteers can be recognized as Snow Angel of the Month. More information and a link to sign up is available at cu-srtsproject.com/snowremoval. Additionally, the National Weather Service is warning that hazardous conditions could affect Monday morning commutes. The agency recommends that individuals should consider postponing travel, drive with extra caution, and potentially pack emergency supplies in case they are stranded. And continuing with the Siberian Express, titled Cold Just Par for the Course at Annual Kickapoo Race, this is by Luke Taylor from Oakwood. The forecast is calling for this winter's biggest snowfall so far, but those who take part in the Siberian Express are used to outrunning some nasty winter weather. With Saturday's 11 a.m. start time, everyone should get across the finish line at Kickapoo State Recreation Area before snow begins falling in the evening or Sunday morning. Either way, race director Deborah Studniars has never been afraid of the unpredictable January weather. Earlier in the week, it was looking like runners were in for a rainy, muddy race rather than a snowy one. I myself have hosted and done this race where we had snow and we had a warm snap and it just gets sloppy, Studniars said. I love that. There have been times when runners come in, and especially the fast guys or gals, their backs will just be splattered with mud. That doesn't look to be a problem, but runners will face similar challenges to last year's freezing temperatures. Despite the weather, Studniars recalls 2024's race having a good turnout and going very well. Advanced signups for 2025 have surpassed last year's numbers, and Studniars predicted as many as 50 people would join on the day of the race. In Studniars' 9th year directing this race, she has gotten into the rhythm of planning everything in advance, and she's already working on something special for her 10th year. She had designs made in time to order medals before the end of September, which meant first she had to decide on this year's theme, snowflakes. She also planned out a gift to hand out to every single participant and volunteer. An after party will be held at the Vermilion River Beer Company with the German food truck nearby. Last year, she gave race entries and t-shirts as gifts to at least one family member and a friend. They're going to hate me, of course, because it's so cold, she said. That's all we have time for. I will take a short break and return with the second half hour for the News Gazette, weekend edition of January 5th, 2025. Please stay tuned.